The Planning Committee at 3:30 PM. This is a rather long agenda, so I'm going to try to move us through it as thoroughly and efficiently as possible. Item number two is approval of the minutes.
Move for approval.
So we have, and we have a second. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Next up is public comments. You have 2 minutes. Please state your name and address for the record. If anyone is here for public comment, please come forward.
I think I'm in the right committee this time. Hello, my name is Janice Laguna. My address is 1179 Camellia Drive. I'm here today asking that the current total number of persons allowed in an accessory dwelling unit be increased from the current 3 people to 4 persons if the short-term rental owner has 2 bedrooms in their ADU. We would like to accommodate families, and the average size of a household is 4. So again, please increase the allowed number of persons to an ADU according to the amount of bedrooms available. Thank you.
All right, thank you. All right, anyone else?
Laura Bixler, 144 Third Avenue. Thank you for Planning Committee for being here today. I am disheartened and disappointed that I have to be here today. I didn't think I would ever have to stand before y'all again. I want to reiterate my story, which most of you know, and that is that I lost my business back in 2008 and started renting short-term to pay my mortgage. I want the committee to keep in mind always those of us who rely upon our short-term rentals to take care of ourselves and our family, and we never want to be bad neighbors to anybody, and we don't want short-term rentals to do anything that would antagonize our neighborhoods. We know that over the past years you worked very, very hard to put in fair and reasonable regulations, and I appreciate that deeply. And I'm very sorry to be standing here again to see it on our schedule. On that note, I'll rely upon y'all to always keep us in mind and to do the right thing for all citizens of this town. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else for public comment? All right, public comment is now closed. Moving on to item 4, which is a presentation by Dominion Energy on upcoming tree trimming projects in Mount Pleasant.
Okay, perfect. Good afternoon. I'm Jennifer Hightower with Dominion Energy. I'm 1277 Chuck Dolly. We have been working pretty collaboratively with staff just to keep them updated as to where we are within the town with trimming projects, and thought it would be a good opportunity to kind of get you guys an update and talk about some 2021 work that carried over into this year, and then the 2022 project that is coming this way. So I have a couple guys with me, but I'm going to have Mark Branham and Clay Chaplin, our 2 foresters, come up and kind of talk through the maps and the project timeline and things like that. We can answer questions as you have them or wait until the end, but it should be pretty quick.
All right, how do we drive this thing? All right. Hello, my name is Mark Branham. I'm a supervisor of vegetation management for Dominion Energy. And we also have Clay Chaplin here, who's a forester and arborist with Dominion. Appreciate y'all having us. A good opportunity for us to talk about the work that we have in progress and also go through a project that we have upcoming this year that is scheduled for this year. So if we could load the... Oh. And can y'all see this?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. So our first project, this is the one that we currently have in progress, and we title all of our projects by, this one is H19, so it's kind of a funny project title, but then we just have different project titles for all the different projects. But as Jennifer was saying, this project is actually a carryover from last year. It was scheduled to be worked last year, got delayed, and so now it's rolling into 2022.
Where is that on the map? I'm sorry, I can't tell what is the 0.4 miles that's Project H19.
I'm sorry. So all of the green lines that you see on the map, Those are all overhead distribution lines. So that's the lines that we're actually trimming.
Okay.
This is like a GIS layer showing the distribution lines.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. It's a pretty big project. It's about 40 miles, and like we said, this one is currently in progress. If you look, we have completed quite a bit of this work already. So up around the Phillips community, down Highway 41, North Highway 17, back into the Isle of Palms connector, a majority of that work has already been completed, and we are now working kind of around the creekside area. And this next section here, and one thing to note is all of our projects are divided up into sections, and we have different section names. So this one is H19 Section A. It's currently in progress. We're working around Creekside right now. But this section takes in Creekside, the Groves, portions of Johnny Dodds, and then a little small portion on Mathis Ferry. And Clay, I think we just started this one Friday.
Yeah, it started Friday and today.
Okay.
So kind of like getting settled into it.
So yeah, we just started this section. And after we finish Section A, we're going to be rolling into Section B, which takes in Rimley's Point, Hobcaw Point, Ion, and a little small piece on Mathis Ferry. Another thing to note is whenever we do start a new section, we send out postcard or email notifications to all the residents. So if they do have any questions or concerns, there's a contact number, and they feel free to reach out to us with any questions they might have.
Could I ask a question about that?
Yes, sir.
Do we have that number?
You should, yeah. It's the 1-800-251-7234. It's our customer service number.
Well, I want the number you given to the residents.
That's it. It's the 1-800 customer service number. And what happens when they call is they'll talk to a customer service representative, let them know what their concern is or question, and then that would generate a service order for me and Clay to follow up on.
Can we have a better number?
That's the best number that we have, and that's the fastest way that it could get routed back to us.
Those 800 numbers don't do well. That's why I'm asking, because I was involved in some things like this in the past, and we would like a better number. I'll just leave it at that.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Keep going.
All right, so let me go back to H19. We project this project to be completed around the mid-June timeframe. And once we complete H19, the same contractor, the same work group is going to be rolling into the next project, which is Project J27. This project was originally scheduled for 2022. It's the next one we're going to be working. It's not as big of a project. It's about 16 miles of overhead distribution line we need to trim out. And again, the green lines represent the overhead distribution that we're going to be working. The areas include the Groves, Bayview Acres, Patriots Point, and then a portion of the Old Village. And currently, we're projecting a early fall completion date on this project. So our Dominion and our crews are going to have a presence in Mount Pleasant for a good portion of the year this year. And Clay, if you want to kind of go through our specs.
But before Clay comes up, Madam Chairman, could we have copies of those maps?
Yes, sir,
going
certainly.
To be working, please?
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Hi, as Mark said, I'm Clay Chaplin. I'm also a forester and arborist at the company. So what we have here is a diagram that shows our specs on a visualized format here. We've got some basic standards that we follow. We have a 10-foot minimum clearance to the outside of the energized wires. We have a 20-foot overhead minimum clearance above. You can see we got a lot of questions with our neutral wires. That's right below the transformer that you can see on the poles. We have a 4-foot below that neutral wire is our standard clearance. We get a lot of concerns from customers with live oaks and large live oaks. Most of the live oaks that we do deal with kind of fall into a could fall into an exception from these clearances, so it's not all cut and dry. Definitely in the old village, there's some exceptions where we do not have our 10 feet, but it does meet the standards for large leaders. But you got the different phases. One on the left side of the screen, that's your three-phase distribution. And that's where you've got the cross arm and three different phases across that construction. That's going to give you a wider footprint when you're doing your clearance, because that 10 foot is from the outside of the conductors. So it's going to be 10 foot on either side. On the right-hand side, they got the single-phase construction. It'll be 10 foot from that pole. So it's a little bit tighter. On the ground, we get a lot of questions with brush and around the ground. We manage 15 feet either side of the pole. That's our standard right-of-ways as we manage. And that is the area that we try to manage around these poles and in yard settings, just so folks can be aware. So if you ever want to plant anything in those areas, be very mindful and kind of reach out to us or look at the information that we have available so it's more friendly. Do y'all have any questions with this?
Madam Chairman?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Have you made contact with the town's arborist, Eddie Bernard?
Yes.
You have?
Yes.
Okay. That's number one. Will you physically be on the site with the contractors while he's doing this work?
Not at every moment.
Who will be on the site with the contractor doing the work?
I mean, our contractors will always be on site. Our contractors have foremen, they have supervisors, and we are always available as Dominion representatives.
So I think, you know, in historically, as Dominion has come through and cut trees, there's this, and we have had a sit down with Dominion about this whole V-shaped cutting that happens. And visually, it's very disturbing to the residents to have that.
That's a wonderful question, though.
Cut out of the trees. And I know that they say that's standard practice, but is there any avoidance of that? Are there any plans to underground lines so that we don't have to keep destroying trees for it?
I know that there are some ongoing underground projects, you know, that are in the works and some in the future. Some they can talk about it over here, some of our other folks. But the V question is a very good question. We have to prune the trees to actually grow around the wires. And if you see a large mature tree that has an established V, that tree has been trained properly to go around that wire. So what you're doing is every 5 years, come back and prune off all the regrowth, the sucker growth, and it opens up that space that we've had cleared around those wires. So when you see the V's or the L shapes and there's big, large leaders there, that is very proper pruning that has been done over time, because you don't get that in one cycle. That takes many cycles.
Yeah, I don't know how Dominion's PR or social media works, but I know for the public, they view that as butchering the trees, right? They don't view that as proper pruning.
Right.
So I don't know if there's any sort of education of the public that you could do, that this is how it has to be in order for the safety of these lines. This is proper pruning. You know, I think, I don't know if that would help, but I just know as soon as Dominion starts work cutting trees, we get emails nonstop, especially about those V cuttings. All right, sorry, keep going. Oh, Ms. Hyatt, did you?
I think he addressed my question. Was how often do you come around and do this?
We're on a 5-year cycle.
5 years, okay.
Right. So the 2021 work, it was scheduled for 2021. It was done in 16 last time, but it's carried over into 22. The 2022 work was actually done in 17 last time.
Okay, thank you.
I just know, you know, living here my whole life, when SCNG was here, we didn't notice the trees being cut to this extent. Maybe they just weren't as diligent about it, and they would just come out if there was a problem. But anyway, it seems to be a lot different now than it used to be.
Please continue.
And Ms. Whitley, just to speak not specifically to the V-cut, but in general, they are working with our communications office, and we will be and have been putting out on social media where they're cutting, when they're cutting, and those sorts of things. And so we are working on that PR.
Great. Yes, thank you.
Certainly.
Please continue.
Yes. Any more questions? Because this is a pretty vague diagram. It's kind of made for Q&A. Right. That's pretty much all of us. But anything you want to add to it, Mark?
For the next project in line, J27, we could potentially do a public tree trimming workshop if that's something that everybody would want to do. Eddie, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think you're going to talk about that for this cycle.
Right. So that's something we could look at doing. And I know we talked about possibly having it at Alhambra Hall. So that could be a good educational resource for residents to come out and learn about our practices if they wanted to.
Great. All right. Thank you so much.
Madam Chairman.
Mr. Chapman, go ahead.
With the maps you've shown us, and we're going to get copies of.
Yes, sir. We can get you copies.
We might want to think about going to the neighborhood association. In some cases, they've got HOAs. Some places, they don't. But as an example, if you're cutting or trimming trees in Creekside, they have a neighborhood association. It would be fabulous if you could make a presentation to them. Same is true in the Groves. Same is true in Hopcaw. Because that might save us from getting a lot of calls. And again, we would like to have a better number than your 800 number. That doesn't work. Because I've been involved with tree trimming for many, many years, not with this council, but in another life. And I know it brings a lot of calls. We being council, need to have the ability to immediately contact whoever's on the job site, and I don't mean the contractor, but whoever's on the job site representing Dominion, so that when there are issues that come up, and they will come up, that we have the ability to contact on the job site for whoever's overseeing the work at the time.
Right. Yeah, and Eddie, we work really close with Eddie Bernard, Peter Stone. Those guys have our contact information. One thing about the 800 number, when a customer calls in, so we actually document that communication. You know, otherwise, you get so many calls that, you know, calls could get lost in the mix. Having that 1-800 contact number and having that documented record of them calling in really helps us to kind of keep track of things. And that way nothing gets lost in the mix, and we do have that record of communication. And it works well for us.
If there could be an addition so that I'm not, or whoever is not, because I know with an 800 number, sometimes it can take you 10 minutes to get to a human. Just push, if you're calling about this, push 1. Here are the options here. If there could just be a sub number that is specific for the tree, you know, if you have, and have it be like you're calling, you have an emergency power outage or whatever, like that's one thing. But then if you're calling about the trees, dial 2, and then so they can get to a human within 1 or 2 click, like one click to a human, that would be fantastic.
Well, we can certainly take that back and talk about it with our team. But for now, like I said, the notifications that are sent out, we do have a contact number on there. So if anybody does have any questions, we do encourage them to reach out to us.
I'm not talking about what you're giving to the people who are in the neighborhood. I'm talking for the town, for members of council. I'm not talking about everybody.
Oh, I thought you were talking about everybody.
Staff certainly knows how to get in touch with us. We'll be happy to share our information with you, or you can have my phone number. You're welcome to call me. 10 minutes may or may not, but absolutely, Michelle knows how to get me. Eddie, Peter, they know how to get these guys, so we're happy to have those conversations. But, and I get it, I understand the 800 number, but Mark is right. He gives us the ability to really track these requests as they come in. And that way they have a good order to address them. It gives us a record so that we know they've been addressed. But I'm happy to talk to you anytime.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you. And thank you so much for coming.
Yeah, absolutely. And just one more thing. There's one more slide, but it's just a reminder that this is why we do it. But the number one is safety, is really our main focus. And we appreciate the collaboration with town staff. And we will certainly be working for the workshop to help educate why we do this. And just happy to answer questions as they come up. Okay?
Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you. All right, moving on to item 5 on the agenda, budget review. Mr. DeMora.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Appreciate it. Looking for a reduction, proposing a reduction in the planning department budget next year. That entire total has to do with the carryover amount that came the year before, mostly in, in contractual services. Those projects were accomplished. Now there's a much lesser amount. That's really what's responsible for the reduction. You'll notice in the salary line item, things look normal there, and that the reduction is indeed in the 6th line item down. But there are some important things to mention to you. Despite that, there is $200,000 programmed in this budget for a zoning code update and a rewrite, which I know has been important to members of the committee. We also have $50,000 programmed to implement certain aspects of the comprehensive plan, along with some other items. $55,000 in historical markers. To continue with that program around town. That's in our maintenance program. Those are really the big highlights. For the sake of time, if you have any specific questions, certainly Michelle and I are happy to answer.
I know that we have one code enforcement officer for the town. For a town of our size, is that really sufficient in order to meet the needs of the community? And that's a question. Ms. Reed, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, it's challenging. We do have the same code enforcement officer, the same number that we've had since, the town was half the size. However, with our new livability unit, we have a livability division, we have a livability task force. So we are taking a different approach to code enforcement. We are collaborating with public services, the police department, and we're really trying to come at it from a different approach. And so staff has worked on a setting up a sort of a log, and what we're trying to do is just collaborate through teams and kind of share the responsibility a little bit. And I know, not to speak to Chief Arnold's budget, but he is also working on getting a community resource officer on that would be sort of really dedicated to our livability task force. And so that would certainly help. But we're one person, it's a lot, but we're taking a different approach with our new division and the new task force. And I think it's so far it's been pretty successful.
All right, great. Thank you.
Yeah.
Mr. Chapman?
I'm going to speak to that issue as well, Madam Chairman. As Ms. Reed knows, I've been on planning staff about a particular car dealership. Mm-hmm. Again this weekend, 4 vehicles, 2 pickup trucks, 2 Jeeps in the buffer area. They don't get the message. We've got to do something else for them to get the message. Secondly, on Mathis Ferry Road, historic highway, Lively Charleston put up probably 20 signs along the road advertising for a open house. Third, Boss on Coleman Boulevard has their truck as their sign together with their regular sign. It's ugly. And that's why I make these comments, because as Councilmember Whitley mentioned, we need to do a better job on code enforcement. I know it's not a cute thing to do, to tell somebody that they're breaking the law, but they are. And it's ugly for the town. We want to be a beautiful town. We want to be the best looking town in the state. But to have stuff like that continue and continue, somehow the message isn't getting through to those people. And obviously our message about the need for code enforcement is not getting through, so that's enough said.
You know, and I tend to agree with that. There's a home in my neighborhood that has been gutted and looks terrible, just like the Tyvek thing on it, for 2.5, 3 years now. There's like a pod sitting in the driveway, and it has been there for a month and a half. And I'm like, where's the enforcement on that? Like, where's the, you know, where's the, what's the remedy? And is there, do we need to strengthen the penalties, or is it people just ignore it and they just, there's nothing the town can do? Because we that doesn't seem right. Mr. DeMora?
That item is in front of the courts.
Oh, that
so
one's in front of the
courts. We have been proactive, and but to your point, we understand your desire and what you'd like the community to look like. And so we take that to heart. Understood.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. We're looking for a recommendation. Oh, is there anything further? Looking for a recommendation to council to approve this budget. Is there a recommendation?
I recommend that we send this budget and approve it to town council.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Motion carries. All right, moving on to item 6, discussion and possible action related to amendments of the town's parking requirements. Ms. Reed.
I am going to let, I know there's, this has been ongoing for a while, went to town council. Town council sent it back to the committee for further discussion, and Mr. Pagliarini is here to discuss any potential changes or what the desire of the committee is to do next.
Thank you. Good afternoon, committee. This is back before us. There was discussion at council, and we are looking now to resolve whether to move forward with any amendments to this provision. And I think there was some discussion related to changes, at least for not a wholesale change, but at least restrictions that if a business is going to implement parking that requires some sort of pay or compensation, that at least signage be placed, requirement that signage be placed, prioritizing customers and non-customers. So that was at least the tenor of the conversation at council. And I know this committee has discussed this many times before, but if there's any final decisions or final discussion, staff would be happy to hear, and we'll move forward with the changes as you see fit.
All right. Does anyone on committee have something to say?
Well,
Mr. Chapman?
Madam Chairman, I brought this up several months ago, and I was actually looking for that draft ordinance in the material I received, but I didn't see it. So I would be in favor of moving forward with the draft ordinance that our legal staff is recommending.
And Ms.
Just to temperature check, I will not be voting for adding any more signage.
Yeah, I kind of, oh, sorry, go ahead, Ms. Hyatt. Yeah.
I was going to say, I think the idea was not to add signage, but to make sure that if they have a sign, that it's documented that their parking is for their business only. Because it just, these situations, it seems anybody can park in these places as long as they pay. So I mean, the sign is already there, so it would just be language that makes sure people realize that the parking is for that establishment. That's all.
Yeah. That was our understanding as to, in that scenario, if an entity elects to have some sort of pay or verification, then additional signage. So if I said new signage, that's not correct. Or if I implied that, it would be a disclosure that this parking is for a certain certain business, and that they retain rights to tow or remove those vehicles. Because I think the overall concern was that this just becomes a moneymaker, that anyone can park there, and exactly, the business is not discriminating as to who is using those spaces.
Exactly.
I think I'm more in line with Ms. Corley. I feel like we're getting a little into the weeds here with sort of micro-regulating of like, here, I mean, are we going to come up with the specific language? Like, you must say this about your sign. You know what I mean? I think it's getting a little bit too invasive, and I think that, you know, people, I think the market will impact how people choose to spend their dollars, right? Like, if someone's going to start charging for parking, then maybe I'm not going to patronize that business anymore. So I'm with Ms. Corley, and I would not recommend anything further on this topic.
And just one more thing, really no way to enforce it either. Like, I'm ready to just put this thing to bed.
Do we have any motions from the committee? All right.
Mr. Chapman, did you make a motion? I mean, I'll second it if that was a motion. But
my only issue is we have an ordinance for businesses. They have to have a certain number of parking spaces available for their customers. And for whatever reason, that's not happening. And that's the only reason for bringing this up, that the businesses are required to have a certain number of parking spaces for their businesses. And that's the only reason that we had this. So I would make a motion that we in some way delineate for the business delineate that there's parking is for their customers if they have some kind of a device which doesn't necessarily show that. And there are different ways to do that. And that's the only reason for this.
If a motion, do we have a second?
I'll second.
And we're in discussion. Is there any further discussion? All right, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
All right, 2-2, motion fails. Is there any, I think we're done with this topic. Is there anything further on this? I think we're done. Let's move on to item 7A, annexation.
Okay, this first annexation before you is on Annie Laura Lane. The request is to annex a property in. It is recommended for traditional neighborhood, as you can see here on the comprehensive plan, and in a second I'll mention the adjacent property, which is also
move
proposed.
For approval of both 7A and B.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All right, moving on to item C.
Okay. This last one is on Crystal Drive, between Highway 17 and Billy Swells Boulevard. You can see from the map here, it's sort of adjacent and behind Royal Palms townhouses. It is recommended for community conservation and it's recommended for community conservation. It's also recommended for the Sweetgrass Basket Overlay District. So as such, it would automatically come in as community conservation, and it would be in the Sweetgrass Basket Overlay.
Move to approve.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Motion carries. Moving on to item 8, review of Planning Commission recommendations from March 23rd. Item A is a rezoning.
And we just had one item to bring to you. It is a rezoning out in what is known as Pepper Tract, but it is not considered part of the Pepper Tract PD. It came in recently as R1, low density residential district. And the property owners really kind of wish to blend in more with the Pepper Tract PD for equestrian uses and things like that. It's a large tract of land. And so this request before you is to rezone the parcel to RC2, which is our Rural Conservation 2 district. This is an appropriate request.
Second. We have a motion to approve in a second. Is there any discussion?
My only discussion is if you haven't been out to see all the houses that have been built in Pepper Plantation, take a ride out there. It's amazing and it's beautiful. It's really pretty.
This would enable them to have equestrian use on the land.
Correct.
Yeah.
Great. And it would just be one home on the land given the acreage.
Yes, ma'am.
All right, well.
Ms. Whitley?
Yes.
I'm sorry, was that Ms. Hyatt that made the motion? Or Ms. Corley?
Ms. Corley.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, is there any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All right, moving on to item 9, discussion and possible action regarding the town's definitions for family and single family dwelling.
I brought this up, and I'll let Ms. Reed give you that definition.
Okay.
Because I want everybody to know how many people can actually live in a single-family home that we have so much suggested is the way we want things done. Go ahead.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chapman. As you mentioned, you asked that we put these definitions on. And you're right, these definitions have been around for a long time. So it may be something that we want to look at with our code rewrite. The single-family dwelling is really, it's a detached building designed for occupied exclusively by one family. So what it gets to is the definition of a family. And I'm going to give you our definition as a town, and then I pulled up the definitions for the county and the city. And so I thought I would provide those to you as well, just for a little bit of context. But our definition, as I said, has been around for many years, is any number of persons related by blood, marriage, adoption, or under approved foster care, living and cooking together as a single housekeeping unit, plus not more than two unrelated roomers, boarders, or domestic employees, or no more than three unrelated persons living and cooking together as a single housekeeping unit. And this is really fared well for when you think about roommates. You know, you have a roommate, more than up to three people living in a house. It's been effective. It's been reasonable thus far. The few complaints we've had, we dealt with. But I did pull, this was not very helpful, but I did, oftentimes when we don't have a definition, we pull Black's Law Dictionary. And it really kind of had the same thing. It talked about blood, marriage, fostering, anything like that. But I did want to pull Charleston County and City of Charleston. I thought it was interesting. So the City of Charleston defines a family as an individual of two or more persons related, or a group of not more than six individuals, including live-in servants, not related by blood or marriage. So that one actually takes it quite a bit further than ours does. And then the City of Charleston has an individual or one or more persons related by blood or marriage. And then it also talks about plus not more than two unrelated persons living together, or a group of not more than four persons unrelated. So if you look at it in the context of those other two municipalities, our definition is actually a little on the conservative side. But as I said, it seems we don't get a lot of complaints when we do. We've had a few over the years we've dealt with. And it's really kind of a difficult one when you do get a complaint, you know. Often the complaint comes in the form of there's a lot of vehicles in this driveway. But if I am a family of four or five and two or three of my children are driving, then you're going to have multiple vehicles. And so oftentimes it's left up to trying to figure out who's family, who's not, trying to prove residency and those sorts of things. But as I said, it really has been pretty effective over the years. We are in the midst of a code rewrite, so if it's something we need to revisit, then we'll certainly do that.
So, Mr. Chapman, what was your concern in bringing
this forward? My concern was a constituent brought this to my attention from a particular neighborhood, that how many people could live in a house next door to him without having some issue.
And he's concerned about too many people?
Too many people. So I don't know that our definition is that bad. I'm just saying that when you're talking about all the reasons why we want single family or no more than four people in a neighborhood house, then take a look at our definition of single family. You can get a lot more people than just four. So whether it's cars, whether it's the individuals, or whether it's just that they have to expand the house bigger than it really was for that neighborhood. So I just wanted the committee to understand how many people under our definition can live in a single family house as opposed to a non-single family, which might be
a duplex
or something like that. So I just wanted everybody to understand that.
Any commentary?
And that's all.
No? All right. I guess for me, I mean, I moved here from Alaska 7 years ago, and there are a lot of big families in Alaska, like people with 12 kids. So how are you going to
and I have four kids. So I was once accused of running an unlicensed daycare, and I'm like, no, these are just my children. Like, we're not running a daycare. This is just my kids. You know, you have a friend over, and it is like a daycare. like 10 kids running around. So I like this expansive definition of family for number one, and in fact, I feel like number two is too restrictive, especially with the rents in Mount Pleasant being as high as they are. I would almost tie it to the number of bedrooms in the house, like no more than one unrelated person per bedroom living and cooking together, right? So if you have a five-bedroom house, you could have five unrelated persons living and cooking together as a means of saving money. So I hesitate to make it more restrictive. There are big families. I know some amazing families that have five kids of their own and are fostering additional kids. They're amazing people, and I would hate to think that any neighbor is going to call them out and say, you got too many people living in this house. It's like, they're doing positive things for the community. So if anything, I would want to expand number two and tie it to the number of bedrooms in the home, like no more than three or one per bedroom, whichever is greater. Ms. Hyatt, Ms. Corley, Mr. Chapman?
I think Mr. Chapman was just giving that up for information, but...
I was.
Were you interested
in... No, I wasn't interested in changing it.
Okay.
I was interested in particular that we understood when we're not doing something to increase the number of multifamily units, because you're going to have certainly less people physically living in a multifamily building than you are with a single-family house. That's the only reason I wanted it on the agenda for people to understand. And again, I did get a complaint from a constituent in a neighborhood where they were having an issue with extra building within the house to satisfy the number of bedrooms, the number of kitchens available, and the number of entryways. That's all.
But they're supposed to be living and cooking together as a single unit, right? So, I mean, if you're building multiple kitchens in a house, then that would be in violation of our definition of single family.
Not if I had a bedroom upstairs with an extra bathroom where I wanted to have the ability for my mother-in-law to be able to cook upstairs. Mm. So I'm pointing this out because we've got some other things on here dealing with non-single family.
Ms. Corley?
So it was just for information, but Michelle, your planning is not asking us to revisit this definition because really nobody has even, that's not something you guys are dealing with or you need our help with.
No, it's not something we've dealt with. I know we met with the same folks that Mr. Chapman is referring to, so I was aware of the situation. But overall, this is not the definition we have. I'm not saying it may not be outdated. Maybe we do need to further restrict it. Maybe we need to further loosen it. And that's something we can look at as we move forward with the code review.
Yeah, it doesn't need to be done now.
Right.
And it could tie into our next topic as well.
Thank you.
Okay.
Will. Yeah.
All right, closing out number 9, 10, maximum occupancy for an accessory dwelling unit.
Mm-hmm. So I was asked to place this on the agenda by Mr. Icafano, and I think he's here. But real quick, I will just tell you what it's about. It's basically has to do with our accessory dwelling units and the maximum occupancy. And back when our ADU ordinance was written in 2010 and adopted in 2010, the maximum occupancy anytime, and these have to be recorded. So the way it's written is each accessory dwelling unit shall be limited to 850 square feet, and these conditions shall be memorialized in a recorded covenant. And one of those is that the occupancy does not exceed three persons, regardless of the number of bedrooms. And many times our ADUs are two-bedroom rather than just a one-bedroom. And so I think this is why he had asked that this be placed on the agenda for discussion.
So. And would this, if this change were to occur, are these ADUs that are short-term rentals? Is this ADUs that are long-term rentals? Is this just ADUs,
just
period?
Just ADUs in general.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you. Any questions from committee? Ms. Hyatt?
I think this came up due to the short-term rental ordinance, because the rules with that were tied to our ADU rules. And I think they were talking about wanting to expand the town rules so that they could expand the short-term rental rule. I think the two were kind of tied. So,
Mr. Icofano, please.
Yes. The initial thought was not around short-term rentals. The initial thought was with a two-bedroom dwelling, that having a family of four, a parent and two children, that they would not be able to stay in an ADU. That was the initial, one of the initial thoughts of this.
To be more supportive of families in Mount Pleasant.
Yes, that's correct. Especially, you know, in the need of needing affordable housing in Mount Pleasant.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Any other questions for me?
So we're talking about 800 square feet.
Well,
maximum.
850.
850. Mm-hmm. And then we're putting two bedrooms and 850 square feet. And we're asking to go from three to two per bedroom or four max. Right? Four
correct.
People and 800 square feet, 850 square feet.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
But it's just family. This is not being profited from. These are just family ADUs, right?
No, this would be for anyone who has an ADU. They could rent it. They could rent it full-time. They could rent it as a short-term rental. This would change the rules for occupancy of ADUs, period. I think for those that are long-term rentals, this could be, like, if a family is just starting out in Mount Pleasant and they have one kiddo and they're living in an ADU, then they have a second child, this would allow them to stay in their residence as opposed to being forced to move to somewhere else.
Correct.
So should we make it four as a family? Because I think four unrelated people in an ADU, there's no parking, right? There's no way four unrelated people.
I think parking should be definitely considered.
I think it's got to be a family.
When doing something like this, that's for sure.
Single family.
Can we define it that way?
So right now, if you have an accessory dwelling unit, you have to provide one additional parking space per ADU. So that if you wanted to clarify that it is family or if it's not, I think if you said it was not family and then you would want to provide an additional parking space, I think that gets, you know, a little more complicated, but we do already require one additional space.
So if it was four unrelated people, that's four cars. One additional space is not enough. But I don't know, Mr. Paglarini, are we allowed to say, you know, if an ADU has two bedrooms, four related people is what is allowed?
No, I think that's a logical breakdown and a way to do it.
Okay.
I think it's fairly neutral in that way, so I wouldn't have a concern. I think we want to go back to the definition of defining bedrooms and the like. That might be a bit of a challenge.
All right. Any other thoughts from council?
Madam Chairman, my thought is, when the whole issue of ADUs came up, it was not to be an additional rental unit. It was to provide a place for a member of the family living in the house that was on that property where the ADU was placed. It wasn't for additional rentals, but for example, a family member who may have gotten older that needed a place to stay. I'm concerned that this is expanding the definition and use of what was supposed to be almost a temporary place for somebody to live. And I'm concerned about that.
I mean, I view the ADUs as a potential solution to, I mean, especially since we have a cap on the number of short-term rentals. The ADUs are there for your mother-in-law suite. They're also there as potentially entry-level affordable rentals for the community. And we also have permit allocation on the number of ADUs. So it's not like if we change this, that suddenly there's going to be 5 million more ADUs in the town. I think just redefining this to allow a family of four to stay in their ADU. I mean, if I own a home, my kid is married with two kids, and I have an ADU, it'd be great for them to be able to live there, right? And under the current rules, that family member would not be allowed to live there, that child and their children. So I think four, like one household, four family members, to me seems to be reasonable. I don't know. Is there?
I could see that. I just, what problem were you trying to solve?
Well, that's, I mean.
Exactly what she said.
Madam Chairman brings up a great point. I mean, it's typical. I'm a family of five, so I'm out. But
I'm out too. Family.
I don't mind
six.
Getting rid of one of mine, definitely. But the most expensive one. But yes. Yes, I think it, I believe that it is very difficult to find. I mean, the ADUs are being used as housing, and it's very difficult to find affordable housing in Mount Pleasant. And I don't know that three is the typical size of a family, and with two bedrooms, you know, I think four is more reasonable.
What's the cap number on ADUs?
It's 20, I believe.
I'm sorry, ma'am?
How many ADUs do we allow? What's the cap right now?
Well, we don't have a cap on ADUs. No, we have a cap on the short-term rental. Is that what you mean?
No, the 20 per year of ADUs are approved.
Yeah, ADUs are permitted. They are somewhat capped, I guess you would say, under the building permit allocation system, but not as an ADU. Mm-hmm. Like, there's not, we don't get like 600 ADUs and that's it.
Right. No, it's 20 per year.
20 per year.
For 5 years of the permit allocation, which we're in year three, four?
We're in year three. We've got 2 years left on it.
Mm-hmm. And we could always extend permit allocation as well.
Yeah. Well, I would support this going to four, two per room.
Or just to council for discussion?
Just to council, yes.
All right. Is that a motion?
Yes, that's a motion.
Right. Do I have a second? No second? All right. I can second it. I will second it for the purposes of discussion and for voting. All right. Is there any further discussion? No. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Wait, no. No. Oh, 2-2. All right. Motion fails. To send it to council. All right. Item number 11, discussion and possible action regarding the town's short-term rental program.
Okay. we were asked to place this on by planning committee based on some concern from the public, and so we just wanted to reiterate a few things and see how y'all want to proceed. So first, just a kind of a recap. The ordinance does cap the number of permits at 400. The provision states at no time shall the maximum number of STR dwellings exceed more than 400. The ordinance protects those STRs that were legally existing at the time this ordinance was adopted. There were 37. The provision states all STR dwellings legally in existence as of the effective date of this subchapter shall be subject to the provisions of 156140. In order to qualify for that's the non-conforming, legally established non-conforming, they have to provide our staff with satisfactory documentation showing legal existence is subject to review and approval by the zoning administrator, or Jane typically looks at it, our short-term program operator.
I have a question about those 37. They still have to annually file for a permit.
They absolutely.
Okay, yeah. Thank you.
Our statistics from our Rentalscape software, which is great, it tells us so much. But from March 2021 to February 2022, our average daily active listings was 344. So that was as low as 305 and as high as 371 in July of last year. And so even though there are 437 permits out there, the average daily listing is 344. So we just wanted to point that out to you. So where are some of the 400 plus the 37? I wanted to explain that a little bit. The ordinance requires a specific date for new application. So we don't have renewal. We have reapplication. Just if you've had one, you reapply. If you've never had one, you apply. We have the same application date opening for everybody. That's how the ordinance is written. So applications will be accepted beginning January 1st, 2023. This last cycle, in order to get in line with the business license timeline, we made that permit 18 months instead of 12 months, which I thought was pretty generous. Plus, it allowed us to not have to do a six-month permit. So we did 18 months. So beginning January 1st, 2023, that will be the first application cycle under this current program and ordinance, where the cap was lowered from 1% down to the 400. So then the next provision, and as the ordinance is written, it allows late reapplications. And because members of the council expressed concern about protecting those who were previously issued permits and followed all the rules, we have that. So basically, come July 1 or January 1, 2023, until January 30th, 2023, we take all those applications in. And we process all of them. We accept up to 400 applications throughout that period. And then after that January 30th, any that may come in after that, there was not a drop dead date for that. And so if somebody can come in after January 30th, and this may be where we do need to tighten it up a little bit, mm-hmm. after January 30th, if somebody comes in and they can prove that they operated legally, they made investments into their property, they paid all their taxes, and they got all the proper permits the year before, then we would issue them a permit. And so I think, having said that, those 37 are still going to be protected if they continue to operate under the ordinance. And so I think, if anything, what we may need to do is, we could do a couple of things. We could do, come January 1 cycle, we could say, and we have time to do this, we have until January 1 until reapplication. So we could perhaps say January 1 to January 30, everybody applies that wants to apply, whether it's a new one or you already held one. And then we could move the ones that already have one to the front of the line and process those first. And then if there's any permits left, process them in that way. But if we're going to do it that way, I think we need to make that very clear in the ordinance, because the way it's written right now, we are, I think, obligated to protect those that have been operating legally, even if they happen to come in after January 30th.
All right. If that makes sense. I think we need to tighten the ordinance, because this creates an opportunity to, or this, if you can late reapply and still mm-hmm. get it because you were already incumbent, then that gives you freedom to just expand the number of permit. We had a clear cap of 400.
Exactly.
And if 100 people, if we get 100 new STRs and then 100 people late reapply, now we're up to 500. Mm-hmm. I think that no late reapplications, and I don't think that was ever the intent of council to allow late reapplications. Anyone, is that the sentiment of this committee?
Yes,
ma'am. And let me just say, another way you can do this is just hold that 37 from, subtract 37 from 400, and you don't issue any new permits beyond whatever 63 permits.
But I think those 37 have had a year and a half to figure out the game and see how things are going. If they don't apply between January 1st and January 30th, they lose it. We have to have a clear rule for everyone, and we have to meet our cap of 400. I know. As a council, our discussion of the number, our concern was short-term rentals taking over in Mount Pleasant, and especially taking over in areas with no HOA, and dropping the housing stock for people who are renting in Mount Pleasant. And, you know, this is an aside, but I received an email from a constituent, and I guess, you know, people make so much money off of these short-term rentals versus the long-term rentals. This is the description to me was, there are apparently single moms in Mount Pleasant who are renting STRs Monday through Friday for $1,200 a month. They're renting Monday through Friday, couch surfing on the weekends because they want to live in Mount Pleasant and send their kids to Mount Pleasant schools, and they want a safe community to raise their kids. And because of STRs, or not because of STRs, but because of their inability to find an apartment complex that they can afford, they are renting STRs Monday through Friday and couch surfing on the weekends. And they're making $1,200 a month off that Monday through Friday and $1,600 a weekend for the 4 weekends. That's what's happening in Mount Pleasant right now, which is a very unfortunate situation. I don't think there's anything that council can do to say you can't do that or you shouldn't do that, but that's what's happening right now. So I think we have to make it absolutely clear in the ordinance that our cap is 400, and that's what's happening in this town.
And we can protect the 37 or whatever. whatever it is, by just holding that back from the year. And but you don't have to, because what you can also do is notify them that they have the opportunity if they apply by such and such a date. And if they don't, they lost that opportunity.
Ms. Hyatt, do you?
I guess I'm confused about the 37. I thought at the time that we passed this that we had like 300 and something, and that those over 300 was what we were going to let continue to renew, and then it would go up to 400 and be a cap. So I'm not sure where the 37 that are being honored. I thought we had 300 and something we were honoring, so I'm confused about what those 37 permits are that we're going to just in perpetuity allow to renew forever. I mean, I don't know where that number came from, who those permits were.
They, the ones that over the 400 fell under section 156-140, so they had been operating prior to the change in the ordinance. And so we tried to honor that because we knew that they had followed the rules previously. And
it was only 37?
Over the yeah, correct.
Were those the bed and breakfast?
It includes those. Yeah.
I think people are been on plenty of notice of our change to our STR rules in this town, and I think you know, if they're all on notice that coming January, they have a 30-day window, January 1st to 30th, to get their application in. If they're late reapply, they lose it. And if it matters that much to them, then they can apply in that window. And if they lose it, then they do a long-term rental and still. I mean, I saw someone advertising a 4-bedroom in Mount Pleasant for $6,000 a month to rent in Mount Pleasant. So I think you can make good money doing long-term rentals, even though you make way more money doing short-term rentals. But I think having this cap and making it clear in the ordinance that this is the cap and people don't get to late reapply, that's the recommendation I would make to full council. Ms. Corley?
I think, GM, you had me, but then your argument for it kind of talked me out of it, which was that single mom trying to make ends meet by renting out her home.
No, she's not renting out her home. She's renting from an Airbnb person.
So she's renting Airbnb during the week so her kids can come to school here.
And then she's living, she's couch surfing with friends on the weekend.
All right, it just made me think about.
No, she's not renting out her place on the weekends. It's not her place.
Telling people what to do with their houses.
No.
It just makes me feel icky inside. But I get what you guys are saying. And I'm going to support it, I think. I think I'm flippy on this one. I wasn't as confused as I am right now. But for now, we'll say yes. Yes.
Okay. To a cap.
Yes. To a cap.
Oh, yes. Ms. Hyatt?
So I guess it would be a priority of first come, first serve as far as...
Well, it shouldn't be first come, first serve. We're going to have to tighten up the language. If you truly want people to have the opportunity that had operated in the past to get, and they've done everything right, and they've made investment in their property. These folks make a lot of investment in their property. Mm-hmm. They're putting a lot of money into it weekly because of the short-term rental. And so I think we're going to have to, we should protect them in some form or fashion. So I think what we could do
I just
is
meant over, like once the month is up and we realize we have free permits, like if we only have 389 renew in time, then the rest, I meant that gap.
Yeah. Yeah.
Would be first come.
Yeah. Right. Anything
that's,
left over?
I didn't
over?
Mean the whole
yes,
program.
Ma'am. Absolutely.
I meant we automatically allow people to renew
right.
in January,
I think
and if they
right.
don't, then people that have lined up.
And we give preference to those folks that already have one, and if they've done everything right, and then if there's anything left over, yes.
Yeah,
right.
So I think making it clear that if you already have one and you apply, you get that renewal. That's going to happen for you. Mm-hmm. If you don't reapply within the window specified, then you
right.
lose it.
Right.
Unless there happens to be leftover, you know, leftover things. But what we don't want is to slowly ratchet up the number
right.
of short-term rentals in this community by yearly allowing late reapplies.
Yeah.
That's my concern. So do I have a motion to send this to council for discussion?
I'll just say, so we would, the cap would still be 400, and if we're over that right now, we'll just lose some by attrition until we get to 400?
Because how many do we have now?
437.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. We have a wait list, too. So, I mean, there are folks that, and like I said, they're, you know, 344, a lot of people get these and they just sit on them for the bridge run or something like that. They're not using them. And so I do think that if we tighten up that deadline, if there's any stragglers that come in, they don't get it in time, even if they've had it, they fall off. And if there's permits available, they're available for folks that truly want it and are on the wait list, or else there's not. But yeah, I think that deadline is probably part of the problem.
Do we have a motion?
If there is a problem. Like I said, this program is really running pretty smoothly. Jane's done a great job. This Rentalscape software has been phenomenal. So it's really allowed her to monitor these and
do we have a motion?
Do a good job.
To send this to council?
So the program's going well. We haven't had more than, on average, never on any day, more than 300, mm-hmm. less than 400 at a time.
344.
So we're sending it to council to
clear the language.
Clear the language of the deadline.
Yes, that you cannot late reapply. Because
not late reapply.
Right. So the 437 are already in.
Mm-hmm.
They're in. Even if let's say all 437 reapply in January, they'll all be renewed, even though we're above the cap. But if some of them fail to renew, they drop off, because until we get back down to 400. Is that what you were talking about, Ms. Hyatt?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So I think that the recommendation would be to council to tighten up the language for late reapplies to ensure that our cap is 400.
So you have a month to you better make sure that you apply during the month of January.
That's right.
Or you might be out.
That's right.
Madam Chairman, may I suggest, and instead of starting out with the number 400, we start with 363, because if you subtract the 37 from the 400, it's 363. And at that point, you give notice to everybody who's got a rental.
To the 37 or to all 437?
To whoever hasn't yet sent in their application, that if you don't send it in by the end date, they lose it, because that's how we got to the extra 37. We were.
I mean, I think it's, I mean, since this is an ordinance, I think it's maybe fine to leave it at 400, and then we can just lose those through attrition if they don't renew.
If they sell the property.
If they sell the property, it doesn't pass along to the new owner.
I'm trying to figure out a way to make sure we don't get above 400 again.
Well, by doing this, by having an absolute cap of 400, and then it's going to decline through attrition.
Yeah, well, the problem is that there are 437 already issued, and we don't want to boot any of those 437 if they get their application in on time. So the only way to drop our, so we're at the cap already, we're beyond the cap, and the only way to lose those 37 properties and get down to 400 would be if people don't reapply, if they sell their property. So I think it may take 2 or 3 years before we even meet our desired cap of 400, but it would be in a way that was fair to the Airbnb owners, because they would be on notice. They need to apply in this 30-day window, and if they fail to do that, there's no late reapplies to protect them.
Well, I like the fact there's no late reapplies.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So do we have a recommendation to send this to council for discussion?
Ms. Whitley, do you want it to go to council, or do you want us to work on a draft amendment and take it to the commission for, because it would need a public hearing.
Okay, do you want to do that?
So
yeah,
okay.
I do.
Do we have a motion?
I move we take the issue of short-term rentals that we're discussing and send it to the Planning Commission.
Second.
All right. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right. Motion carries. Item number 12, discussion and possible action regarding the town's current residential density and commercial zoning districts. So this is something that's going to eventually be taken up by the full zoning code overhaul. But I think there was an impetus to get it cleared up a lot sooner than that. Ms. Hyatt, I know you asked for this to be on there, if you'd like to.
Yeah. I just feel like we have a moratorium that is not forever, and this is probably an issue that we should address and make sure that the number is where we want it sooner rather than later. I know it could take a long time to do the zoning ordinance, and the faster we fix things that are the reason we have our moratorium, then the sooner we can not have that. So that's why it's here again, to see if we can just resolve it sooner.
Ms. Reed, do you have further?
No, I understand the concern. I think, as Ms. Hyatt said, we're working on the code rewrite. It's just to recap, you can do residential in commercial zoning. It's a conditional use. You can't have any residential located on the ground level. And density shall not exceed 12 units an acre. But then folks aren't able to do that right now because of the moratorium. And the moratorium is in effect until March 23. And then we also have our building permit allocation system ordinance, which is there are no multifamily units available. And that runs until we've got 2 years left on that. So that's kind of where we're at still.
Okay. Is that?
We do have multifamily zoning and things throughout the town that will be allowed to move forward once we don't have the moratorium as well. So this is addressing commercial properties, trying to encourage AB to be developed as commercial properties and not to have such a focus on those being residential uses. I feel like we would want to eliminate residential because, you know, people might want to have live upstairs or have a business downstairs. So I think it is good to have residential and commercial areas. I'm just not sure if 12 is the right number, and that's why I wanted us to discuss it or maybe send this to council. I mean, if we have some large parcels in town, you know, almost 10 acre parcels, 9, so you could get, you know, 100 apartment units on a commercial property, and I'm not sure that that's what we want. We have schools that are full, and I really would rather see jobs and things.
I think the balance for me, the balance that you have to strike as well, is that I would love to see jobs too, but people have to be able to work those jobs. And Mount Pleasant has a huge problem in that there is very little affordable housing stock. So how can people afford to live in the town, to work in the town? I know restaurants that have been like, we're not doing takeout tonight because we have too many reservations for dinner and we just don't have the staff to handle the takeout orders as well and provide that quality. There's help wanted signs and all these things, and there aren't enough people to do it. So I also to build an apartment complex, I think there is a certain minimum number of units to make it economically viable for the developer to have it work, really. And so 12 units per, it used to be higher, wasn't it? Didn't we reduce it to 12?
It was, it was 16 and 20 for mixed use, and then we reduced it to 12 a few months ago, about 4 or 5 months ago.
I don't like the idea of, you know, people saying let's pile people into Mount Pleasant, but I think, you know, having a mixed housing stock available, we have the moratorium. I just am not sure if we reduce it further, then we're going to end up with nothing, because it doesn't make economic sense to build unless you build, you know, $1 million, like $5 million apartments on that, and which doesn't help with the housing at all. And our moratorium does not apply to affordable housing at this point in time, right? So if someone wanted to build affordable housing, apartment complex, they could do that. But we just haven't had anyone come along to do that, because every apartment that's built is not affordable. We're not that affordable. Yeah. So, but I feel like 12 is, we already reduced it once. It seems reasonable to me. I don't know that we need to reduce it further. But
Madam Chairman, I agree with you. That's one of the reasons I wanted the definition of single family and have a number of people that can live in a single family house. This to reduce more than 12, to bring it down below 12, continues the process of sanitizing Mount Pleasant, getting us all single family. I think 12 is reasonable. We've already reduced it once, and I think the 12 is sufficient. That's the way I feel.
Ms. Corley?
So, just looking at floors, if we're doing 12 per acre, so we're talking about, what, four buildings? We could get up to four structures. Am I looking at this right?
You could get to one structure.
But 1 acre... All right, so if how you many floors up do you think 12 would give us? That would have to be three floors up, right, to get 12?
Well, there's building height limitations, right? So we have a heights map. So I think, Ms. Reed, would it be possible, let's say that I had 5 acres, would it be possible to build my 60-unit apartment complex to my height limit and then have an acre pocket park, or does it have to be dispersed across the acres? That's my question.
There's no requirement in how you meet the density as far as one building versus four or five buildings, no.
But could the 60 units be in 2 acres and then have 3 acres of pocket park? Because the overall property is, does that make
yeah.
sense? That's possible?
I would think that would be possible as long as you met all of our other requirements.
Okay.
Yeah.
And Laura, you were thinking... And I know there's other members of council that are interested in R1, whatever R1 would be.
Three units per acre.
Four.
That's four.
Yeah. Four. No, 3 units an acre is R1.
Three and four. Yeah.
So I think just thinking about what other folks are going to think right now are thinking, and we're just sending this. Where are we sending this to council?
I mean, we could have a motion just to send it to full council for discussion, see if anybody else is interested. I mean, just temperature check. Not really to make a decision on a number today.
Yes.
Because there have been others that have been interested in the discussion.
And maybe this is a question for Mr. DeMora, taking it back to item 10 on the agenda, which was a 2-2 vote not to send to council the accessory dwelling unit. I mean, we could have sent that to council for a temperature check too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I guess, is it possible for someone to place that on the agenda for a temperature check, even though this committee didn't? Would it have to be someone who was voted against it who put it on there?
Typically, Madam Chair, there is consensus on the committee before something goes to council with a temperature check. If even committee's divided, then historically, council looks at that as if, well, it's not ready yet, or maybe there's just not enough support for it, and so we'll worry about other things until there is consensus.
Okay. So, I mean... Okay. All right. Is there a motion on item 12?
I'll make a motion that we send to council for further discussion.
I'll second.
All right. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
2-2.
Deal.
All right. Next item on the agenda is executive session, discussion, and the receipt of legal advice related to pending litigation. Committee may take action on any item, including any subsection of any section listed on an executive session agenda or discussed in executive session during a properly noticed meeting. Do I have a motion to go into executive session?
So moved.
Second.
All right. We have a vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
All right. We are in executive session.
Are we going to the courtroom?
Yes.
Mayor, is there any motion coming from our executive session?
My only motion is to do what we suggested should be done in executive session.
By moving this to full council. We're moving this to full council for Tuesday. Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Motion carries. If there's nothing more to come before this committee, we stand adjourned.
Thank you.
Woo,
what a day.
All right.
Derek,
we did it.
We get overtime.
Do we get overtime?